Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Police are looking for a man in connection with the overnight shootings of Democratic lawmakers north of Minneapolis. Two people familiar with the matter say cops are searching for Vance Bolter, 57 years old. That according to two sources to the Associated Press. Former Minnesota House Speaker Melissa Hortman and her husband are dead. Senator John Hoffman and his wife are wounded. The Brooklyn Park, Minnesota police chief says the shooter was dressed as a policeman and drove up to one of the houses in a squad car. He escaped on foot. In the gunman's car, police say they found flyers for today's No Kings protests in Minnesota and a list of Minnesota state and federal Democratic politicians. A man's been arrested after allegedly making an online post threatening a shooting at today's No Kings Day protest in Palm Springs, California, that according to police. There are No Kings protests underway across the U.S., protesting President Trump's policies, especially the immigration raids. This in Atlanta. This is ABC News. A dramatic conclusion to the Sean Diddy Combs sex trafficking trial after the judge dismissed a juror from the case. ABC News senior investigative correspondent Aaron Katursky.
Judge Arun Subramanian tossed juror number 6 over inconsistencies in his answers to a basic question. Where do you live? The 41-year-old man said during jury selection he lived in the Bronx, but he recently mentioned he had moved to New Jersey. And when questioned, the judge said the juror gave changing answers that raised concerns about his candor and whether he made a deliberate attempt to get himself onto the jury. The defense argued removing the man who was black would make the jury less diverse, and the judge promised to think about it.
The British government announcing today it will hold a national inquiry into organized child sexual abuse, something it has long been pressured to do by opposition politicians and Elon Musk. Prime Minister Keir Starmer saying that he is aiming for a judge-led inquiry with the power to summon witnesses. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Mark Sommerhauser, the communications director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, analyzing the impacts of the big brutal bill.
That number that you mentioned of nearly $15,000 per person, literally about a quarter of the state's economy.
Basically a quarter of the state's economy coming from the federal government. I'm not hearing from Republicans in the state in their biennial budget planning any sort of contingency plan for major disruption in federal funding coming into the state.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. The Todd Albaugh Show.
Ken, as I like to call him, my least favorite Martin, chairman of the Democratic National Committee.
The other night I said to myself for the first time, I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
Matt Flynn.
You go into combat and the general goes, I'm afraid. He reminds me of the coach of the Jets back in the 90s. The other team would come on the field and say, boy, they look big. No, I swear to God. And the Jets lost 12 games. I mean, right? You can't have this kind of stuff. Get this guy out of here. Put in Ben Wickler.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman. A new study highlights the high price of incarceration and says the annual total cost to families of Americans behind bars is nearly $350 billion. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
A new study highlights the high price of incarceration and says the annual total cost to families of Americans behind bars is nearly $350 billion. The study from Fora.us says one in two American adults has seen incarceration in their immediate family, with higher rates among Black Americans. Families with a member in jail or prison spend about $4,000 a year, and the report says for Black families, the cost is more than double due to longer sentencing. Zoe Towns with Fora.us says expenses like phone calls, care packages, long-distance travel, and new costs at home all contribute to the exorbitant price.
It also includes depressed wages over the lifetime of the person who's incarcerated, who's no longer able to contribute, but also to all the other members of the family. Oftentimes are also now experiencing lower pay just because of all of the shock of incarceration and the disruption that comes with that.
She adds the children of people behind bars usually see their own wages depressed throughout their lifetime time even after a parent is released. Wisconsin's incarceration rate is among the highest in the nation. Black Wisconsinites are locked up at a rate nearly 12 times higher than whites, despite making up just 6% of the state's population. The report shows incarceration rates are also higher for people in poverty, with subsequent expenses eating up more than a quarter of the family income. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly sunny today, highs around 80 degrees. Tonight, mostly cloudy, slight chance of a shower and a low around 59. Scattered showers and storms Sunday with a high near 80 degrees. Sunday night, scattered storms and 63. Monday, scattered showers and storms, 85.
It's 73 at our studios.
John Peterson and Gordy Young.
On our next show, we'll talk to Tiffany Hobbs from KFI Radio in Los Angeles.
And we'll find out if the U.S. is going to have a king or not.
The John and Gordy Show, weekday mornings 6 till 8.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome, everyone. You found it. Hey, we're here. The Rational Revolution here on the Civic Media Network. I'm Mark Becker, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is going to be an interesting one. If you want to hear it, share it, all that. You can download the episode at civicmedia.us or wherever you get your podcasts. But again, thank you so much for tuning in. You know, I had a whole plan of what I was going to talk about this week. And then I got a text message shortly after 3:30 on Tuesday that said, "What do you think of the column?" I'm like, "What?" And it was from a guy named Dan Schaefer, who's our political director. And I was like, "Oh, let's see what." Oh my God! I opened up the column and it said, "Pass the torch. Tony Evers should not run for a third term as governor." It goes on to say, "Wisconsin's governor needs to do what many other Democrats have failed to do and step aside when the time is right." He goes on to say that all things must pass. Tony Evers should not seek a third term as governor of the state of Wisconsin. It is time for him to do what many Democrats have struggled mightily to do and step aside when the time is right. For the 73-year-old governor approaching a critical moment in his second term with 2026 midterms on the horizon, the right time is now. I do recommend everybody takes a read of this article at the Recombobulation Area, which is a 19-time Milwaukee Press Club award-winning column. This really was a seismic piece. It was really well written. It goes through everything from the history of the Biden decision during the COVID-19 pandemic and all of that. It talks about Ben Wickler and his role in the Scott Walker debacle. Like it's really something that we need to talk about, and that's why we're going to talk about it with the man himself, the guy behind the pen or the keyboard, I guess, political director for Civic Media and the Recombobulation man himself, Dan Schaefer, joins the show. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, Mark. Thanks so much for having me. It's always a treat to join you here on the Rational Revolution.
It's an honor to have you. And like I said this before we got on the air, I don't know what fire is bigger, the ones that are in Canada or the ones that you decided to start this week. So,
you know, I've got to stir the pot every once in a while. We can't, you know, it's we got to have tough conversations every once in a while. And I think this is one that we need to be having.
It's the dog days of summer, and Dan Schaefer's like, here we go, and tosses a grenade in the middle, and let's see what happens. What was the catalyst? Why did you do this?
Well, this is one I've been thinking about for quite some time, and it is, you know, I think this is a big deal for Wisconsin. I think this is a big deal for Democrats. I think this is a big deal beyond Wisconsin, too, because I think national Democrats have had such an enormous problem with their inability to pass the torch to the next generation that when are they actually going to take this seriously? I mean, after what happened with Joe Biden last year, you know, after Ruth Bader Ginsburg didn't retire at an appropriate time. And now, you know, even in the past few years, there since 2022, there have been eight members of Congress who have died while in office, including three since last fall's election, all of whom are Democrats. Yeah. So I don't know how many more signs that Democrats need before they realize that it is a real problem to be running candidates who are well into their 70s and 80s. And I think, you know, if you look back on some of the biggest problems that the Democrats had in 2024, I think the Joe Biden factor was the number one biggest reason why Democrats lost the election. And his decision to run for a second term and to, you know, go all the way up until the worst debate performance in the history of debate performances. And then to you know, give Kamala Harris 100 days in a giant hole to crawl out of to make it a race for against Donald Trump, ultimately coming up short. But I think that switch probably saved a handful of Senate seats, down ballot seats across the country, congressional. You know, I think the Republicans would have an enormous House majority had that not happened. And I think at what point are Democrats going to get serious about this issue, about passing the torch to the next generation? And I think we have an example right here in Wisconsin where it is a genuine discussion. Like, I think there are some times where we talk about both sides arguments where it's like a fake both sides argument or whatever. I think there are valid points on either side of this, whether Tony Evers should run for a third term or whether he should step aside and allow for a primary and to, you know, pass the torch to the next generation of Wisconsin Democrats. This is a real both sides argument. And I think it's a conversation we need to be having. And, you know, we're recording this on the Friday before the weekend of the Wisconsin Democratic Party state convention, and they're talking about the road to 2026. Well, they're not talking about who's going to be at the top of the ticket, because Tony Evers has not yet made a decision. He said he will make that after the budget. You know, typically that's wrapped by July this year. I'm not so sure if that's going to be the case.
Right.
So I think this is to ignore this conversation and to not be talking about this, I think, is political malpractice. And I think we need to be having tough conversations for those of us left of center to figure out where we can go from here and start winning elections and start making real change for people.
What an agonizing thing that must be for him, too. I mean, you know, like all of everything that he's done, you know, has been to fight and to fight and to fight and just kind of get scraps towards justice and equality and all these things that he's had to really legislate by his veto pen because of the gerrymandered districts and all of that. And like, I just imagine that little carrot that's dangling in front of him of like, oh my God, I could actually do something, because it looks like there is a possibility that one or both of the legislative houses of Wisconsin would flip. And so seeing that, you know, I've had conversations with people offline about, you know, the desire that Governor Evers has to actually like freaking do something instead of always having to take a punch and try to punch back as hard as you can. But you can't do much when you're outnumbered 2-1. That must be really hard.
There. Yeah. A couple things there. One, I think you're right. The prospect of governing with a trifecta has to be especially tantalizing, right? Like to be the guy who, you know, got us out of the Scott Walker years.
Yeah.
Ended the gerrymander and then governed with a Democratic trifecta for the first time in more than 15 years. That would be enormous. That would be enormously consequential. But I think we have to remember, one, it's not about the person. Right. It's about the people of Wisconsin. And so, like, whatever glory that Tony Evers might have from being that guy to do that, it's ultimately not about the person. It's about the office. It's about what Democrats could do for people. So I think, yes, there is a possibility of a Democratic trifecta. And Tony Evers, I'm sure, would love to be at the, you know, the tip of the spear there. But I think at a certain point, you're risking a lot more than your legacy. Yeah. If you're choosing to run again when you're in your mid 70s. And I think there we have seen from the electorate that there are a lot of people who don't want older candidates. They want a new generation to come forward and to lead. And to another point here on Tony Evers, as I tried to make as clear as I possibly could at the very beginning of the column, the first line of the column is Tony Evers has been a very good governor for the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
My issues with Evers are not really policy issues or ideological differences or whatever it might be. My issues with Evers, it is largely an age-based argument, and it is also about building the party for the long term. And I think by staying in office, you know, for a third term, he would stymie the careers and opportunities from kind of the next wave of Democrats to really, you know, take a step up. And we could find out, you know, as the voters, who would really be the ones to step forward. We can talk about some of the candidates that I had on that list later. But I think it is ultimately about, you know, the voters choosing the path forward and not, you know, the consultant class or whatever it might be.
As we're talking with Dan Schaefer, head of the recombobulation area and political director for Civic Media, I do want to talk about that a little bit. We'll talk about the potential candidates upcoming, but I do want to get into, like, you know, if his tenure is done now, how would you characterize what he's done? What are his accomplishments and biggest successes as the governor of Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, I quoted Ben Wickler early in the piece here. Yep. He said I interviewed Ben a couple weeks ago on the recombobulation area, and he said Evers veto pen has been one of the most important collections of atoms in the world in defense of democracy in this state, which I wholeheartedly agree with.
He's so good.
I mean,
at,
I think Evers just, has been the bulwark against a hard right Republican controlled legislature, heavily gerrymandered Republican controlled legislature. I think he brought stability and sanity to the state during the pandemic. Yeah. I think he has, you know, my friend Dan Kaufman wrote this book called The Fall of Wisconsin about the Walker years in the state. Mm. And I think Tony Evers has never let the state truly fall. And I think that is enormous credit to him. But you know, he has signed 3 Republican budgets. He has, you know, had a number of other things that people might take issue with. And again, I don't think this is the conversation to be having about that at the moment. But I think, you know, you're right. He has kind of had to play a little bit more defense than he has had the opportunity to really enact an agenda and play offense as the governor of the state of Wisconsin, too. So I think if you're, you know, kind of zooming out and taking this kind of big picture stock of what Tony Evers' time as governor has meant, you know, it has been, you know, a strong defense of, you know, the state's principles and, you know, so much of the election denier stuff and so many else that he has actually stood up for Wisconsinites in so many ways. I think it's been a job well done by Tony Evers in the, you know, 6.5 years now that he's been governor. But I just think, you know, he's not going to be governor forever. He's not a young man.
All right.
So at what point does he need to pass the torch? I mean, he'll be 75. He'll turn 75 in November 2026 when he's on the ballot again. I actually learned that we have the same birthday, November 5th. So we will be celebrating the same birthday.
Nice.
So his birthday will be 2 days after the midterm election. So he will turn 75 2 days after the midterm election on November 3rd, 2026, which would make him one of the nation's oldest governors. He's currently the 7th oldest governor in the country right now. Of those ahead of him, 5 of those are term limited. And one is rough. I think the governor of I want to say Rhode Island is roughly the same age. So he would be either like the first or second oldest governor if he were to be reelected. He would turn 79 while in office. How are we not having this conversation right now? Right. Like, how are we not having the conversation about whether it's the right decision to be running somebody in their mid 70s for a third term in office?
Yeah, I it's hard to. To disagree with that. It's interesting. I started last week, I think I downloaded the audiobook because that's what I do audiobooks. But it
Same
was
here. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you can't sleep and it's like, oh, let's listen to Jake Tapper talk about what the hell happened with Joe Biden. And I did. I've started that one about what happened and to kind of see Jake go on his media tour and have some pretty hard conversations. He was just on Pod Save America. Talking about, you know, guys, this is what happened. And to even hear the Pod Save America guys who are very, very liberal say, oh, boy, you know, probably that was not the best idea to do. And I really want to continue this conversation with you on the other side of the break. I want to talk about how long you've been thinking about this. I want to talk about, you know, where this came from. And then, you know, all of it. I want to hear about what people are saying to you, who's going to run, all this stuff. Stay with the conversation here on the Civic Media Network. We've got Dan Schaefer on the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. We'll be right back.
Tom Hartman here. You're listening to 92.7 WMDX.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In discussions over the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, backed by Donald Trump, that's making its way through Congress, none other than Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has emerged as the most prominent Republican critic of the bill, saying at a recent Milwaukee Press Club event that it is, quote, not even close to adequate. Johnson has said he wants spending cuts to go even further, including making cuts to Medicaid. But Johnson's position as a critic of this bill makes him especially influential in these negotiations. But let's not forget the last time he was in a similar position. In 2017, he was a critic of the Trump tax cut bill, but what he fought for was a tax break for certain types of businesses, perhaps not coincidentally, businesses owned by his largest donors, Dick and Liz Uline. In 2018 alone, the Ulines received more than $200 million in tax breaks because of this bill. So as the Big Beautiful Bill is negotiated in the Senate, let's not forget this piece of recent history.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
Feeling stressed, frustrated, ready to break something? Come to Crashbox Therapy, Madison's newest therapy experience. Throw some plates, hammer a toaster, smash your stress away, and feel the relief. You worked all week? You deserve a break. Literally. Great for corporate events, holiday get-togethers, or any day ending in Y. Book your session now at CrashboxTherapy.com. 319 Beltline Highway, right next to Pitcher's Pub. Crashbox Therapy. Come let it all out safely, loudly, and guilt-free. Make your appointment at CrashboxTherapy.com.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself, surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. We've got political director for Civic Media, Dan Schaefer, and the man behind the Recombobulation Area who blew up the Wisconsin political world here this past week by saying that Tony Evers at 75 should not run for governor. How long has that been kind of percolating up there?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think... I don't know. I've had a really strong reaction to the Biden stuff. You were talking about, you know, the Jake Tapper book. I haven't read the book yet, but watching that
dude,
debate,
it's wild, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it's so disappointing. It's so disappointing.
And there were so many people who could have prevented this. Yeah. It was a preventable disaster for the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of why I wrote this column is because I think we need to have the conversation before we walk down a similar road again. But I think the Biden stuff and watching people in Democratic circles who I talked to after the debate defend his performance and say that he should still be the candidate. I just thought that was absolutely insane.
Yeah.
I thought it was the worst debate performance I had ever seen. I wouldn't elect that guy who was on that stage last night for any office, much less president of the United States. And so my reaction to that has just been, I just don't think you could ever go forward with telling people that he could be the candidate. You can't run a campaign based on honesty and integrity when you were asking people to deny the evidence of their eyes and ears. It's just not going to work. So I think if Biden had stayed on after that, I think, you know, I think Trump wins probably three or four more states. Mm-hmm. I think he wins, you know, Minnesota, Virginia, kind of that next wave of states. I think Tammy Baldwin loses in Wisconsin. I think a number of state Senate and state assembly races go towards Republicans in Wisconsin and in down ballot races across the country. And I think this is just, it's just so clear to me that this is one of, this is the biggest reason to me why Donald Trump is back in the White House. So I approached this year kind of coming into it thinking like, what is Tony Evers going to do? He is, you know, he's 73 years old. You know, when he introduces his budget, I was at his budget address in Madison.
Okay.
And I that's really kind of when I started thinking about this column, because it was just like, is this going to be
that?
The
when
type
was that
of
for our listeners?
That was in February.
Okay.
So he delivers his budget address, a proposed budget, you know, that, of course, since then, the Republicans have gutted it and voted all of it out and whatever else. So he proposes his budget in this speech, this ceremonial address. And it's like he's, you know, he's never been like an amazing speaker, but it's a fine enough speech. It's, you know, he's got a lot of great priorities. Yeah. But I was thinking, like, is this a budget that would be your final budget? As the state of the budget is the biggest thing you do as the governor. Is this going to be your final budget? Is he going to put some stuff out there and say, you know, hey, maybe I'm going to veto this budget the way I haven't in the other three if it doesn't include Medicaid expansion or K-12 funding or childcare funding or whatever it might be that has been, you know, a number of his priorities for several budget cycles now. And it just seemed like yet another, you know, kind of the same approach that he took when he was running for re-election a few years ago, right? Mm. And it just seemed like he's going to announce his budget, he's going to do a statewide tour, he's going to fill the potholes, he's going to talk to childcare centers, all good things, right? But I just think, you know, from the outside, it does look like he's going to run again, and I think that is probably the most likely outcome. I just disagree with that path. I think we need to have. I think it's time for him to pass the torch. I mean, just look at what happened in. Very recent example here in Wisconsin. We had Ann Wallace Bradley.
Yep.
Now Chief Justice, named Chief Justice to end her time on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. On Thursday afternoon in the state of Wisconsin, had a big ceremony in the Capitol honoring her, thanking her for her achievements. She's 74 years old, and she successfully passed the torch to the next generation.
Right.
The other example that I used similarly in my column is the one of Herb Kohl.
Yeah.
So in May of 2011, Herb Kohl announced that he would be retiring at the end of his term.
Yep.
He was 76 at the time. And this was right after the 2010 midterms where Democrats got absolutely destroyed. Scott Walker won. Ron Johnson won. They flipped the state legislature. You know, the Tea Party wave, all of the stuff that, you know, scuttled Barack Obama's agenda and all of that. Far from a guarantee that a Democrat would hold that seat in 2012.
Yeah.
But Herb Kohl said this at his press conference announcing his retirement. I'll quote, "The office doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the people of Wisconsin. And there is something to be said for not staying in office too long." Hmm. End quote. So does Tony Evers want his legacy to be more like that of Herb Kohl or Ann Walsh Bradley or Joe Biden?
Yeah.
Does he want to put his legacy at risk? And, you know, things happen to, you know, there's a reason that people in their 70s are typically at retirement age, right? There's could be a lot of health complications that come up. I don't know anything about Tony Evers' health. I'm just saying that he is going to be in his mid 70s and there can be some unexpected health challenges that face people in their mid 70s. We just saw it with Jerry Connolly in the late Jerry Connolly in the House. Right.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, does Tony Evers want his legacy to be more like Herb Kohl or more like Joe Biden, or more recent example, like Ann Walsh Bradley, he was 74 year old, just got honored in the Capitol Rotunda successfully passing the torch to Susan Crawford.
So we got a minute for this question. And then we're going to talk next segment about, you know, what the alternatives and options are. We got less than a minute. Why now? Why was this the time to write this column?
Well, he said he was going to make his decision after the budget. And I think we need to be having this conversation before he makes that decision. And I think this needs to be a conversation that Democrats need to be having, that those left of center need to be having, that the political universe in Wisconsin needs to be having. And I don't want to write something before it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel very strongly about this, and I wanted to have my say before a decision was made.
We're going to talk on the other end. Okay, so let's say that he does retire. What's next? So we got Dan Schaefer here on the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Network. Stick around for that conversation. I'm Mark Becker. We'll see you on the other side.
A voice for Madison. Real news and great conversation. 92.7 WMDX.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Police are looking for a man in connection with the overnight shootings of Democratic lawmakers north of Minneapolis. Two people familiar with the matter say cops are searching for Vance Bolter, 57 years old. That according to two sources to the Associated Press. Former Minnesota House Speaker Melissa Hortman and her husband are dead. Senator John Hoffman and his wife are wounded. The Brooklyn Park, Minnesota police chief says the shooter was dressed as a policeman and drove up to one of the houses in a squad car. He escaped on foot. In the gunman's car, police say they found flyers for today's No Kings protests in Minnesota and a list of Minnesota state and federal Democratic politicians. A man's been arrested after allegedly making an online post threatening a shooting at today's No Kings Day protest in Palm Springs, California, that according to police. There are No Kings protests underway across the U.S., protesting President Trump's policies, especially the immigration raids. This in Atlanta. This is ABC News.
Game 3 of the Cards and Crew. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. It's the Brewers and the Cardinals to play Game 3 of their four-game series at American Family Field. Jose Quintana will face the Cards' Andre Pallanta. The last night, sixth inning, St. Louis had two base runners in a game tied 2-2. So Pat Murphy came out to the mound to replace Freddy Peralta. But then, at the last moment, the Brewers manager says he changed his mind.
The players play the game. I believe Freddy when he said, I got some more. You know, I wanted to check with him, and I got some more. And Arenado has been really good against Freddie. I think everyone in the ballpark thought we were taking him out. And I think, you know, when I trust a guy, I've been around Freddie for how many years, and I trust him. And I knew that it was a moment for him that he could get through, and that would maybe change some other moments in the future.
Peralta got out of the jam, and the crew went on to win 3-2. NBA, the Indiana Pacers lost to the Thunder last night, 111-104, the best-of-seven series now tied at two games apiece. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Ted Lasso star Jason Sudeikis learned a lot from his uncle, George Wendt. On a recent episode of the Where Everybody Knows Your Name podcast, actor, writer, producer Brett Goldstein, who plays Roy Kent on Ted Lasso, told Ted Danson that Sudeikis found out about his uncle's death while in the writer's room at Ted Lasso, then added that they matched tears with laughter by watching compilations of George Wendt as Norm. Orlando Bloom is alive and well after his surgery. No reason to panic, Bloom fans. The actor had elective surgery, which was a blood filtering procedure to remove microplastics or forever chemicals from his blood. The procedure is only available at one clinic in London, according to Collider. If you're thinking about checking out this procedure, just know that it costs 10 grand. Let's be honest, most of us will just have to cross our fingers and hope that having Tupperware in our blood isn't as bad as experts say. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly sunny today, highs around 80 degrees. Tonight, mostly cloudy, slight chance of a shower and a low around 59. Scattered showers and storms Sunday with a high near 80 degrees. Sunday night, scattered storms and 63. Monday, scattered showers and storms, 85.
Currently, 75 degrees.
The John and Gordy Show.
Do we get another voice
just
note
to see
there?
If it works for us?
Troy from Mount Hora. Tell that Peterson guy to shut his yap.
Okay, thank you for that. Wow. So you can go to the Civic Media app. You know,
just collect them and start using them against me. Okay. I'm feeling persecuted now.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I know you're a very sensitive guy.
Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
We need a fun listener name, something the followers of the show can call themselves. I thought, how about Couch Potatoes?
Potatoes?
I said it as a joke, and Todd cracked up. He goes, I love that. Whatever it is, folks, embrace your inner couch potato. We are not meant to work in the farms and hunt food. We were 1,000 years ago. But now, I think God wants us to sit back and be entertained.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Maggie Dawn.
At 4 o'clock, I'm joined by Matt Rothschild. We go deep on book banning in Florida. Did you read Judy Blume? Did you like it? Well, Florida kids won't be able to read it anymore. We discuss.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose.
We'll let her go for a little bit. Senator Chris Alpine's favorite song, former host of the Rational Revolution. Good to be here. It's good to be here with Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area and of Civic Media, our political director here on the Rational Revolution. Dan, before I ask a question, I do want to say that as someone who has been in a position where you got to say the thing, I really appreciate your courage to be able to stand up and say the thing. I know it's not something that's, it's not an unfamiliar place for you, but I do appreciate it. And it's something that... that's needed, you know? So thanks.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
So you said something last segment. You think that he is going to run. Why do you think that?
Well, I just think that all signs are, it seems like what he's doing now is a whole lot like what he had been doing, I guess, in what would it have been, early 2021, yeah. After he'd been reelected and after he was, after he was elected, it's second budget cycle. It just seemed like he was setting himself up similarly and doing a lot of the same stuff that he was doing beforehand. Mm. And I think, sending fundraising emails or whatever it might be. I just think it seems like he's headed that direction, but from what I've heard, he genuinely has not yet made the decision.
That's good.
He's asked about this in every media availability he seems have across the state about whether he's made his decision yet. And he said he keeps saying after the budget. and now that the budget is getting delayed and has an impasse and, is going to have its own set of complications over the next month or so here. Yeah. I think that but I do think he's still kind of on track to run again. I think most 2026 candidates in most other states have made announcements thus far.
Right.
So I think, it's incumbent upon the incumbent to make a decision at some point.
Do you think the Democratic Party of Wisconsin is prepared for a competitive primary like that?
Prepared? I mean, I'm not totally sure. But I think a primary would be a good thing. This is part of what I wrote in the piece too, is that I think Democrats have avoided primaries and I think that's been to their detriment. And yeah. I think, the situation with Harris last year, it was so late in the game. It was like, okay, this is an acceptable enough process to not have a primary. She was the vice president that I was fine with that. But also, I don't think it was a good process, right? I think we would have been better off if the voters had decided. And I think in 2022 here in Wisconsin, when all of the Senate candidates dropped out and endorsed Mandela Barnes, I think Mandela Barnes was a good candidate, may have even overperformed expectations in that race, even if he came up short. But I think his candidate would have been a little sharper had he faced some more robust competition in that primary. I think there is like this iron sharpens iron quality of these primaries that makes these candidates more better situated for a run. And I think it would be, as we are in this moment talking about what's the next best path forward for the Democratic Party. And, who's the Joe Rogan? We need to find the Joe Rogan of the left, or we need to find the best messaging, or is it going to be abundance or populism? How about we let the voters decide? I think it needs to start with what direction the voters want to go. And we can talk about the list of candidates, but I think, and I may have some people on the list that I favor more than others, but I think that's not the point. I think the point is the getting back to the small D democratic process,
right?
That I think so many of us believe so strongly in, that is going to be the path forward, that the voters are going to give us the path forward, not the consultant class, right, not whoever else, not the party bosses. It's the voters who matter at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I think it would be kind of cool to see someone who is, you know, a center left person. That's a, like a consensus builder, like not not the crazy right now Tommy Thompson, but like what's the Democratic version of the common sense Tommy Thompson from the 90s that worked with everybody, that everybody said, hey, he's a good guy. So who are the candidates that would come to mind? I think the Democrats have a really big bench.
I think it's a pretty strong bench. I think that's part of it, too. So I think, as I wrote in the piece, if Evers decides not to run, candidates could include Attorney General Josh Call, Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, State Senator Kelda Royes, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, and the soon-to-be former party chair, Ben Wickler.
Do you think he would do that?
Undoubtedly a few more on that list, too. So I think it's a group of more than qualified candidates. Like, I think this is a pretty strong bench. And looking into a 2026 election cycle that might be more advantageous for Democrats. I mean, that's the history of a midterm election. When you have a Republican in office, it's usually a better year for Democrats in the midterms. We saw that in 2018 with the blue wave. So I think there's that's a factor to be considering here as well. And then, you know, look, I don't know. What do you think of that list of candidates there?
I think it's good.
Is there anyone I missed?
I don't know. You know, it's interesting is like some of the candidates that have announced for other seats could make a run, like Rebecca Cook. You know, I think she would have been a pretty, she's already announced for Congress, but I think that she is someone that, you know, in a purple district that I think people would be able to listen to. And I think what's important is it's not just the Milwaukee-Madison area. You have to come up and you have to perform in Green Bay. You have to perform, you know, in the western part of the state. You have to perform with blue-collar people. And you can't perform well with blue-collar people by doing a lot of the same things that Democrats have been doing over the last 15 years. You cannot do that. And so who is that candidate? Jeez, I don't know. I don't know. You know, it's crazy to think, you know, of who that would be. Is it someone that's elected or is it someone that's not? You know,
it could be an outsider. It could be, the host of Rational Revolution, you know, whoever it might be.
I've had friends that have said, you can't run for that. It's got to be a state office if you do anything at all. And they're like, oh, okay, sounds good. Yeah, whatever.
But I think, you know, and I think on the Republican side, too.
Yes, I mean, what happens there?
I think the field that they have for potential gubernatorial candidates right now is awful. Yeah. I think they have a really rough group.
Tom Tiffany.
Right now. I think Tom Tiffany, you know, whether if he decides to run, he might be the highest profile name. I don't know if he has any kind of crossover appeal.
He's
outside
terrible.
Of a deep red district in the northern part of the state. Washington County Executive Josh Shulman has thrown his hat into the ring, the only announced candidate on the right now. I think he is a terrible candidate.
Yeah.
I think he is wildly overmatched for this.
Yeah.
We ran a piece at the Recombobulation area a couple of weeks about this from columnist Jordan Morales, who wrote a piece about how in one of the reddest counties in the state, Washington County, in 2022, he failed to get a police funding referendum passed.
That's hilarious.
Like, what is the record that he is running on at all? Right. And then, you know,
I think he'd be
like
a great candidate
and rehash candidates and like whatever else. This guy, Bill Berrien, who's a political unknown from southeastern Wisconsin business community, is considering a run. Sure, I guess. Brian's the one guy who I think would change the conversation if he did decide to get in, I think would be Brian Stile, first congressional district representative. Okay. But I think he's going to be running again in that seat. I think he is, you know, he's been kind of rising in the ranks in the House.
Yeah.
And I think maybe he's smart enough to realize that this isn't the best year for a Republican to be running in a statewide race.
Well,
take that shot.
And that district is a targeted district by the Dems. And so I think that the Republican Party, the big GOP, is going to ask him to stay there because they do need someone with his
history.
But
he has consistently overperformed in a more competitive district than some of his other Republican counterparts. And so I think, you know, if there's a member of Congress in the Wisconsin Republican member of Congress who is probably best positioned for a statewide run, I would say it's Style. Maybe that's for Senate in a couple of years.
Yeah. Though. I wonder if Gallagher would come back. I don't know, but he did the whole Trump thing. So that might tick him off. Is Hovde still got his ear to the ground?
I've heard Hovde's name in the mix too. Yeah. His name will come up in these articles talking about a run. It would not surprise me at all. That came up when we were talking about that on Matt and Aaron Air this week too,
as
potential Republican candidates. And I think Jane thinks he's going to run again. Yeah.
That would be a mistake. What is your reaction been to the article?
It's been a range of things. It's been, you know, right-wing media has had some pretty bizarre reactions to it.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that at all. Like Dan O'Donnell went on the radio the other day to talk about how this is part of a coup.
I'm instigating
a palace coup. And he insinuated that like somebody is whispering in my ear for this column. And this is part of a larger shadowy effort to push Evers out and make way for Ben Wickler. Which is so ridiculous. Like to think that I am behind some sort of palace coup. I'm just a guy writing an opinion column in Milwaukee. Like there's nobody's whispering in my ear about this. This isn't part of a larger effort. This is just one guy with an independent opinion column who has a take.
And you know, Dan O'Donnell's got to come to the defense of Tony Evers, who he repeatedly punched in the face here. Apparently, you know, he feels bad for the guy. Dan O'Donnell found his moral compass, which is great.
I expected some people to disagree with me on this, and I'm not surprised that there have been some who have. But I think, you know, I'm also a little bit surprised on how many people have spoken positively about this column as well. I've had a lot of people reach out to me and say, you know, bold of you to write this. You know, I wouldn't have been the one to do it, but. You know, thanks for saying this. I agree with you. You know, it's time, whatever. So I think there has been the reaction to this. I expect it to really, you know, kind of piss people off with this one.
Uh-huh.
And I would say the response has been much more positive than I anticipated.
Dan Schaefer with his closet full of Molotov cocktails, I'm not going to ask for any names, but has anyone reached out and messaged that are like, oh, wow, okay. That have surprised you privately
a couple. But you know, I think the general consensus is like, are you a fan of the movie Big Lebowski at all?
I've never seen it. My brother is. Okay.
So there's a line in the Big Lebowski where people say, where, you know, John Goodman's character is saying, am I wrong? Am I wrong? Yeah. And the dude says, you're not wrong, Walter. You're just a blank, you know? So that's kind of just been the general reaction to the column this week.
We got a short on time here. We got about a minute and a half left. I know we talked about, we let the people of Wisconsin decide. However, we can't, you know, we got to do that. We got to do this. Who do you think would be the best candidate, and what voters do they need to attract?
I'm just going to keep with what I said in the column. I'm sorry. I think this needs to be the voters decide. And I may have people that I think of more strongly. I endorsed David Crowley early in the process for Milwaukee County Executive. I've been a big fan of his for a long time. You know, I don't know what his name recognition is like outside of the Milwaukee media market. So I think, you know, just as one example. So like Crowley is somebody I've backed for a long time. Would I do that for governor? Maybe, but I'd also want to see, you know, what a campaign would look like once it goes from the hypothetical to the reality too. I think that matters as part of it too. But I think it ultimately, it should be up to the voters to decide. I think the consultant class thinking that like, oh, you need to have a candidate in mind and oh, let's clear the field for this person and blah, blah, blah. I absolutely hate that mentality.
Yeah.
Hate it.
Well, if we got 30 seconds, if Tony Evers does step down, how seismic is it? How big is that? What does that do to Wisconsin politics?
I think it is a big deal for Wisconsin politics, obviously, but I think this is something that could reverberate nationally. I think that we always know, I mean, we just saw about the spring election and how that impacted the relationship between Donald Trump and Elon Musk. We know that all eyes in the political universe are always on Wisconsin.
Yep.
And I think it's one thing for like 80-year-old Dick Durbin to retire in a blue seat. I think a popular governor in a purple state like Wisconsin retiring and passing the torch to the next generation would have reverberations nationally.
Dan Schaefer here on the Rational Revolution. Thank you so much. We got him on the show.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
You know Ignite Glass and Gifts' three locations in Madison, but you can also shop igniteglassandgifts.com. You'll find grinders, lighters, collectibles, hand-blown glass water pipes, artistically designed jewelry, and plenty of other items delivered straight to your door or to family and friends. Madison's favorite for glass, gifts, and vape, Ignite Glass and Gifts, Monona Drive, Williamson Street, and Odana Road. Plus, igniteglassandgifts.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Tarrant County, Texas County Commissioners approved a new county redistricting map June 3rd, diluting the votes of Black and Hispanic voters. But commissioners claim the gerrymandering was for political, not racial reasons. The map likely eliminates a majority-minority district and has drawn widespread condemnation and a Voting Rights Act lawsuit. County Commissioners and Senior County Official Judge Tim O'Hare brought in the Conservative Public Interest Legal Foundation and the National Republican Redistricting Trust to draw the map, according to reporting by Democracy Docket. Their efforts apparently manipulated the districts to gain another GOP County Commission seat and a 4-to-1 advantage. Analysis by the UCLA Voting Rights Project and Southern Methodist University found the approved map packed District 2 Black and Hispanic voters into District 1, reducing the chance a Black or Hispanic candidate would be elected in District 2. Because the county staggers election cycles for different districts, it also disenfranchised as many as 150,000 voters, heavily Black and Hispanic, who can't vote in their current district's 2026 election and must wait until 2028. Voters sued under the VRA and the 14th and 15th Amendments. The commissioners claim that they gerrymandered for political advantage, to which the Supreme Court turns a blind eye, and not racial discrimination. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Time for the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Warm weather is finally here, and so is wildfire smoke from Canada. Forecasters say we can expect air quality warnings to come and go and come again with no end in sight as fires blaze out of control across central and western Canada. Environmental advocates say the hazardous smoke blanketing our state just when we want to head outdoors shows no community is safe from the impacts of climate change and should be a wake-up call for policymakers. The EPA is pushing to end its popular Energy Star program that has helped families identify energy-efficient appliances and home energy upgrades for more than 30 years. A group of U.S. senators, including Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin, is calling on the EPA to keep the popular program, saying for every dollar spent on Energy Star, Americans get $350 in savings. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back. Wow. I feel like I need to like take a breather after that. Jeez. Serious thanks to Dan Schaefer for, you know, having a lot of courage to say what I think needs to be said too. It's definitely not the easy thing to step up and say something that might not be super fun to say. And we're going to use that segue here on the Rational Revolution to say some other things that people might not want to hear, but they do need to be said. And I want to talk about a challenge that kind of cuts to the very core of our democracy. And it is the challenge of how we respond to protest, civil unrest, and most importantly, violence. It is a topic that I think demands moral clarity, even when it's politically inconvenient. And I believe that it is a moment right now for Democrats, not just as a political party, but people who care about truth, justice, and our democratic institutions. We have to take the high road. And let me start by stating this plainly and unequivocally. Violence has no place in a democratic society. None. Violence has no place in a democratic society. Whether it's throwing a brick through a window, or setting a car on fire, or a mob storming the Capitol chanting about hanging the vice president, violence undermines the very freedom that the protest is meant to protect. And we must never be afraid to say that. And we must never hesitate to condemn violence, even when it emerges from people who may otherwise share our political views. That is what it means to have principles. That is what it means to be a leader. We all say this. We say this all the time on this show. This is not about left versus right. This is about right versus wrong. Yes, there are deep and legitimate reasons why people take to the streets. Protests are often born of pain, injustice, inequality. They're born of voices that have gone unheard for way too long. The right to peacefully protest is a cornerstone of our democracy. It is. It's not only something that is clearly legal, but it is essential. From the Boston Tea Party to the March on Washington, protests have been the way Americans have bent the arc of history towards justice. Period. But when that protest turns violent, we do lose that moral high ground. The cause becomes blurred by the chaos, and so we as Democrats must be clear-eyed. We must be willing to say, no, we do not condone burning of buildings and cars. No, we do not excuse looting. We do not rationalize violence, because not because we want to appease anyone, but because we believe in something better. We believe that justice and the law are not mutually exclusive. But I do also want to address something else. We have to talk about the rank hypocrisy that we are seeing from people on the other side of the aisle. When protests erupted in cities like Minneapolis or Ferguson in the wake of George Floyd's murder in the summer of 2020, protests rooted in the centuries-old fight against racial injustice, all of those protests, Republicans were so quick to moralize that. They almost immediately clutched their pearls and pointed to, oh, the broken windows, the burned cars, the spray-painted statues. That was proof that the Democrats have completely lost control. They called those communities war zones. They called the protesters thugs and terrorists. And Fox News ran that looped footage for weeks. Those demonstrations, most of them peaceful, that captured the nation during that summer, were rooted in righting the systematic injustice that has hung around our country's neck as our original sin for generations. Those reasons, those very valid deep wounds in our society, were completely ignored by the right as they used that very moment to politicize the fight for justice and equality. But then, on January 6, 2021, when a violent mob fueled by lies about a stolen election that were incited by the former president and current president stormed the U.S. Capitol, we heard something completely different. That demonstration, which was a direct attack on the very fundamental pillars of our democracy, was rooted in lies, hatred, and evil. And where is the same outrage then? Where was the wall-to-wall news cycles and harsh condemnations? Where was the moral clarity? Instead, we got excuses. We heard that they were patriots. They were simply expressing frustration, or it was a tourist visit. Let's not forget, oh, by the way, they erected gallows. They broke into the people's house with zip ties and bear spray. They beat police officers with flagpoles. They searched for the vice president of the United States, saying out loud they wanted to hang him. And many Republicans said, wait for it, nothing. Some even defended it. The protesters, they received presidential pardons. That is not just hypocrisy. It is cowardice. It is complicity. Now, I'm not saying one form of violence justifies another. That's not the point. The point is, if we're going to be a nation of laws, values, and of truth, we cannot be selective about when those laws apply and when those voices matter. We don't get to pick and choose our outrage based on political convenience. And even now, when our protests are incredibly justified, Democrats must not fall into that trap. We must take the high road even when it's hard, especially when it's hard. Because when we speak out against violence, whether it comes from a protester in the street or a rioter in the Capitol, we are not weakening our cause. We are strengthening it. We believe in change, not at the barrel of a gun. We believe in progress, not by smashing windows. We believe in democracy, and democracy means working within the system even when it is slow, flawed, or frustrating. It means protecting institutions and not attacking them. We got to take the high road. Take the high road. Happy Father's Day to you, one and all. I love you guys. Download the show on the Civic Media app. I'm Mark Becker for the Rational Revolution. We'll see you.
This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Police looking for a man in connection with the overnight shootings of Democratic lawmakers north of Minneapolis, with two people dead. The No Kings website says Minnesota protests are canceled at the recommendation of the governor because there's no arrest yet. The Texas Capitol and Capitol grounds in Austin were evacuated a few hours ago because of a credible threat against state lawmakers planning to attend the No Kings protest, says the state's top law enforcement official. This No Kings Day march is in Frisco, Texas, just north of Dallas. Demonstrators opposing President Trump's policies and immigration raids. A man's been arrested after allegedly making an online post threatening a shooting at today's No Kings Day protest in Palm Springs, California, police say. The Omani foreign minister says the indirect talks between Iran and the U.S., which were scheduled to happen tomorrow in Oman, will now not take place after all. This is ABC News.